Okay, you hit record slightly before me. I'm now recording.
Okay,
nerve point. So we just talked about the concept of taking one point of data and making a giant decision.
Well, Dad says that I should get a job at the insurance company instead of being an artist.
That's cool. Like, so consider the source. So, you know, Dad has a certain background and interests and biases. And obviously, depending on your dad's role, probably is pretty important. You might want to listen to that. If it is disharmonious or really kind of conflicting with how you normally feel on the topic, you might want to go seek some other input as well. No matter the source, even if it's Dad.
Wow. So I should go talk to Fonzie.
Totally. You should play Ozzy Osbourne records backwards. No. I remembered something that this is okay. I'll share a brief personal story. But I'll preface it where, like, this is all me. Like, I'm the problem in this, okay? all right. Long time ago, I would go to a every summer is a really cool situation where a friend of mine, his family had a cabin, and we could go up there. So Minnesota, I've, you know, lived here my whole dang life. Can't get out of here. There's too many lakes, and you're pretty much trapped. But there are lakes where people, for some reason, want more chores than one house can provide. So they get another house on a lake, right? And then sometimes they share it. This is all side information.
That's really the rationale. They're like, you know, no. I just don't have enough to do.
I wish I had two lawns to mow. Anyway, I go to this friend's, like, it was a great retreat every summer. And, like, we would, you know, we'd whoop it up and also just relax. It was so awesome. And I, you know, shared an idea that I had that I was feeling really nervous about, right? And this is something I have not, you know, told a lot, shared a story a lot publicly. Maybe we touched on and Lean Into Artcast, and I'm having an old man moment. But the gist of it is I had been reading a lot of inspirational let's see, things that were inspiring me in making magazines surrounding game industry stuff, right? So I was reading Morph's Outpost on the Digital Frontier. I was reading Game Developer Magazine. And all of a sudden I realized that I had a few different friends and maybe I could meet other people that we could form a geek garage band, if you will. And out of our own love for games and out of our varying skills that we had and or were gaining, I could start a business, right? We can make a game project. This sounds stupid dumb right now, right? I was talking in 1994 with some friends with this idea, right?
Yeah.
The year 1994, prior century. and it was, I had some of my friends were already interns at, like, one of them was an intern at a think tank company, and they were, you know, that company, like, they had SGI machines, things that were being used on, you know, exactly. I mean, like, I'm seeing Jersey's eyebrow reaction on the Skype. And, I mean, so it was high tech stuff for the time, right?
Yeah.
And, another who is like an intern C programmer or somewhere else, whatever. And they were telling me, like, all these people that I work with that know these different things that you're going to need to utilize, there's no way they're going to work for free, dude. This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Right? And so I was like, oh man, what do I know? And by the way, yes, I was a janitor at the time. So whatever.
So you had no credentials?
I had no credentials whatsoever.
What about getting, like, a small business loan in order to pay the people, in order to fund the thing up front so you can get it started and rolling, right?
Maybe.
It's like, maybe, but I mean, it's like, yeah, that's
a lot of risk, right? I mean,
of course it is. Of course it is. But there's such a thing as having a vision and seeing it through. And I'm not saying, like, recklessly. I'm saying, like, you make a plan and you think really hard about stuff before you execute on a thing. But it's like, yeah, that one data point, you're always getting, or a lot of times, you're getting the emotional reaction of somebody who is not as invested in the thing as you are. Mm-hmm. They don't necessarily, they haven't thought about it. This is news to them. They haven't thought about this thing as much as you have, right? Mm-hmm. And the responsible thing would be, Oh, interesting. Why do you want to do it? Have you thought much about this? Have you thought much about this? Let me pelt you with some questions to see how deep your thinking has gone on it before I jump to some kind of reaction as to whether or not it's a good idea.
We're right? all a bunch of young dudes, though.
Of right? course, of course. So, and there's nothing
no offense
worse
to all any young dudes listening to this, but there was a couple of my friends had a little bit of an inquisical, not quite that in depth of inquiry approach to it, but I don't know. It just seemed, it was more of a boy. Rob's really passionate about this. I want to give a caring ear to my friend, right? And but by and large, the whole judgment on the idea was like, that's just oof, man. I've never heard of such a thing. That's probably not a good idea. I don't think you'll ever succeed. And I chose to accept that, yeah. Right? And yeah, and so there you go. That was it. And I don't know why I'm on this podcast. No, actually, what happened is a few months later, Game Developer Magazine published an article for a company. I cannot remember the game. I could hunt it down. I've kept the magazine, but they published an interview, a story about a company who had a title now released on the 3DO system, right? The Electronic Arts 3DO. It was like an $800 system that was before the PlayStation 1.
Mm-hmm.
And, but here you go, published company, and they did exactly what I outlined as an idea. And that was kind of it. Like, I think there was probably an audible snap outside.
And that was your soul crumbling?
No, it turned to I don't know, some really either flame on fire thing or an incredibly hard substance.
Yeah.
That I said, oh, okay, well, that's it then. I'm doing this. And there you go. I started reaching out and, you know, formed a business with some like-minded friends and friends of friends. That what became Basement Brothers Enterprises, and that was the project that I started to, you know, really learn and apply developing games and user interfaces and all that stuff, and that's what frickin' launched my career.
Wow.
And I don't know what would happen if I didn't change my mind. And I realized in looking back, it was, you know, like some, you know, like the younger me was like a little bit self-righteous about the whole, like, oh, darn it, you know, you guys should have been a little more supportive, right?
Yeah.
But really, I mean, I think the negative feedback is something that we got to watch out for. And it's important. It's data. It's just data. It's not good. It's not bad. It just frickin' is. And correlate it. Gather more. You know, like that's if I would have just done that, right, I would have, you know, started a few months earlier. I got lucky. I mean, I was lucky that I found that other that counter, that to perspective that helped me realize that the possibility was very wide open.
You know, I keep coming around to a sense of frustration and anger with this idea of, I don't know, dude, you know, that friend, that family member, that person, whenever you say, I'm really excited about this, I don't know, dude, no good can come of that, you know. But perhaps I've been, you know, forgetting that, because like I had a lot of people try to talk me out of going into the field I went into.
You know? I would imagine.
As most of us do, right? Whenever
you're being an artist. What are you doing?
Right. And whenever I came up against that, after getting over the initial teenaged angst, I would say, well, to hell with them. I'll do it my way and I'll show them, right? Not the best motivation in the entire world, but it got me working.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
So perhaps I've been too hard on the, I don't know, dudes, right? Because they at least perform the function of galvanizing us to say, oh yeah.
And right. They're right. And on one hand, the thing they're reacting to has that risk that they're reacting to. How are they really quantifying it in a useful way? Maybe not, but like, they're like, there's difficult things down that way. I wouldn't want to do those things. That's all. I'm not really empathizing with your interest to do those things. You know, that happens sometimes as far as
people react.
Yeah.
I guess, but I don't know. Maybe.
Am I showing too much empathy?
No. As a matter of fact, I'm wondering if I don't have enough. Because, like, what I'm thinking about is, like, if you said to me tomorrow, Rob, like, guess what? I'm going skydiving. Now, if you said, guess what, Jersey? We're going skydiving? I'm going to say, I don't know, dude, because the idea of falling out of a plane and trusting myself to tie the ropes right, not going to happen. Hmm. But if you said, I'm going skydiving, I'd be like, all right, are you excited about it? Do you want to do it? Oh, good for you, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's wonderful when my friends take risks that I don't want to take if they really want to take them. I don't know. But maybe that's because I don't have any empathy, you know, because it's like, well, better you than me.
Well,
it's not my problem if something bad happens to you. So good luck. Good on you, you know?
Yeah. Well, let's see. It's a different role. I mean, it's a different, you know, so providing the positive reinforcement versus saying, you know, negative, don't go that way. I guess, let's see. Sometimes I'm trying to go devil's advocate on that. So like if people do positive reinforcement, maybe they're not as invested. But what if they are? What if they're just like, I am excited that you're doing something that just resonates with you so much, and that is what's good in the universe, right? Go ahead.
I like to think that that's what my motivation is, yeah. But who knows?
But if you're like, well, you're not going to dive over my house, right?
You're not taking any of my stuff with you, are you? I take it back. When I'm working with my students, I do tell them not to do certain things, but it's never technique-oriented. It's more like that kind of language doesn't happen in my classroom, right? Like when like a kid will criticize another kid's work in like a disparaging or mean way, like that looks dumb. Like, no, we don't talk like that in my class. That word does not have any currency in this room. Right. Or if a kid is expressing, you know, a lack of self-esteem, like, oh, it's just not good enough. I'm like, you don't get to say that. You know, as a matter of fact, crappy drawings are wonderful in my classroom. You know, I'll tell them no about that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but like if a kid says like, I want to do a comic with monsters, or I want to do a comic where, you know, like there's like an axe murder or something, I'll talk with them about it first. I'm not just going to be like, I don't know, dude, murder's bad. You know, well, sure. What's the context? What are you trying to do here? And then if they bring up something where I go, this is dicey areas, I'll say, would you be okay with your parents reading that? You know? But I'm not going to say, I don't know, dude. Right?
Exploring it with a question, though. I'm trying to think of this example. I think it was probably listening to Campbell. No, that's one place. But there is a certain... I don't know what it, that's just a centeredness and a comfort that I think sometimes people get when they are, I associate it with wise old people basically, where they're like the things that, you know, one stereotype is the curmudgeon where it's just, you know, blatant and unfiltered statements and whatnot. But then there's the other approach where it's like, it's the most refined yet honest, unfiltered thing of like, that's an insightful question that comes out. And I think that is just the coolest. I don't know.
Are you comparing me to like an old wise guy?
Yeah.
Wow.
I am.
I'm not even old yet.
No, not at all. It's just.
I jumped directly from innocence to wisdom.
Innocence to wisdom. Yep. Who needs all that experience?
I'm doing the double-fisted, over-the-shoulder baseball player shake.
Yep. I love that. That insightful question is like, that's like a magical kung fu that I want to grow. That's all.
Oh, and like I think when I asked, like, would you be okay with your parents reading?
Yeah, that's what a great way to frame that up, because it's partially, it's you're helping create a perspective that they can establish their own relationship with that perspective versus saying, your mom and dad are going to hate that, you know?
No, like what I tell my kids, what I tell my kids is like, I know you guys know bad words and I know you guys know about adult situations, but I'm not, you're not supposed to know that I know. and your parents know that, you know, but you, they're not supposed to know that you know that. So we must keep up the facade. You know, because when we were kids, we totally knew. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, there were kids in my class with Playboy magazine, you know? And like in fourth grade, and they showed me, and I was like, what is that? I don't want to know about that. But, you knew about that stuff. So I'm not going to pretend that the kids are stupid. And like, if they're going to try to do something that's a little bit beyond the scope of their years, that it's because, you know.
Yeah, well, it's not imposing the, okay, you're not being a referee who blows the whistle, who says, nope, boom, red card.
Yeah.
You cross the willful ignorance line.
Yeah.
You know, you're ruining the facade or whatever you're doing. You know, like it just, yeah, that's just a, I think that's, I don't know, I like that approach.
Oh, well, that's cool. I like to know that I'm actually using good approaches. But I only have a single data point.
I'm just one data point, man. I'm just one data point.
You're just one data point. Actually, no, the best data I have is the class retention and how many kids come back for next year's class or next session, right?
Nice.
And I'm still teaching to a packed house, so I must be doing something okay. As a matter of fact, I'm thinking about cutting back on how many kids I let into the class because I got a lot of boys in this class and it's 13 kids and you got like, what is it, like 8 boys who are all like 12? And they're starting to like assert themselves in that kind of like, who's the smartest? Who's the funniest? You know, it's fun, but it's a lot to manage, man.
Oh man. I cannot even imagine.
There are times where it's like, oh, my job today is just to keep these boys from killing each other. And if they learn something, that'd be pretty cool too.
Yeah, it's gotta be. That's yeah. Completely. Mind-bogglingly, that's a really foreign challenge. But I wouldn't tell you to like. Well, I wouldn't do that. Why do you do that?
And I don't know, dude. I don't know, dude. Is my favorite version. That's my favorite derivation of that response. Like, I don't know, dude, because like, there's so much laziness built into that response. I don't know, dude. Sounds like work. I don't know, dude. Sounds like I have to think about it. I don't know, dude. Sounds dangerous, and I don't want to get off the couch. You know.
Sure.
I love that response. Oh. So, I don't want to drive us into too many weird directions, but data points, man, that ties into what we were talking about before we started recording. You know, how do we collect more data points on things that we want to do, things that we make? Oh,
and what we have been making.
Yeah.
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 Well, and you also texted me with an intriguing premise.
Oh, yeah.
As well.
Yeah. So I went to another talk, and it was about data visualization, actually. And there were some really interesting points brought up about how social media has the appearance of a public commons, and people interact with it like a public commons, but it is not a public commons because that data is owned by the companies who make the network in which you're interacting. And so it's these two visual artists who are trying to, in their own way, liberate that data by creating different software to visualize all sorts of data that they're scraping from these social networks and then releasing it open source so that more people can use it and benefit from it. Because they said like the difference between operating on Twitter versus talking with people is when you talk with people, you can do that in the park. And there's nobody to tell you that you can't express yourself any way you want.
Right.
But like going into Twitter is like going into the mall, right? Because when you go into a mall, there's an implicit user agreement that you sign by walking into that mall. You're going to behave this way. We have the right to throw you out, right?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, there's a lot of malls. Like also, yeah, anyway.
But
I work
the most,
in downtown Minneapolis, and there's a lot of signs around businesses and whatnot too. And
like
they're practically like clicking in a software agreement.
Yeah, right? Like, don't park here. Don't smoke by this door. You know, don't, no dogs unless it's on this kind of leash, right? Like, yeah, there's 100 rules in front. And I'm not saying that I hate rules. I'm just saying that there's a trade-off. There's a trade-off to the convenience of a mall, right? You have to operate by their rules. Whereas if you go to a park, there's less. It's the rules established by the community, right? So very different thing. So, but the most intriguing thing that they said, and I sent you a picture that said "Be human." That's the way they ended the talk, and you know that, you know, that really resonated with me. That was like hitting you right in the heart with an arrow. Like, ah, yes, be human. Uh-huh. Because what they were talking about is another problem with data visualization is when you boil anything down to statistics, and this is true for social media as well, when you boil yourself down to a persona, you lose an intrinsic humanness about yourself. Why? Because statistically, all humans have 1.8 legs, right? Statistically speaking, yes. That is not true because some humans have 2, some humans have 1, some humans have none. But right. Statistically, we have 1.8 legs, right? And so when you take data and boil it down to that point, you've lost the human complexity. But the complexity is what makes us human. And so part of the work that they're doing, and I can link to the talk these people did. I can send you a link to it if you want to include it in the notes for this.
Yeah, cool.
But the part of their project is to visualize complex data to reintroduce us to and celebrate our complexity. Because complexity is ultimately what really makes us human. Seeing us in our unsimplified, non-persona, you know, I don't want to say dirty, but you know, like the contradictions. The contradiction surprises and confusing elements are ultimately what make us human. You can't boil that down to 160 character Twitter description.